If you could have a white person represent all white people, who would it be? And same with you. And same with you, Amy. If you could, and if you could have one
if
black
person. If I could have a white person represent all of you.
I'm going Dolly Parton. If there's got to be a white person. You don't like Dolly Parton? She's such
I like Dolly. I'm not sure.
She has given so much. She's a generous
person.
Dolly,
the one who represents
us all. You have Mother Teresa and you're going with Dolly
Exactly. Exactly.
Y'all not know what Dolly Parton does for her community?
All right,
guys.
Books.
Dolly Parton next week.
Just because I don't believe or agree doesn't mean I can't learn from you.
Why did you have to bring that up?
Okay, that one I'm super embarrassed about.
Do you like me?
Do I like you?
Yeah.
As an individual or as
a
podcast?
Yeah, as a person.
No, I like you.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I don't have any interest in appearing to be stronger than I am.
I ain't bowed to Nebuchadnezzar's statue. He gonna lead. You feel me?
How do we love people who see the world differently than we do?
What would it look like if we truly loved all of our neighbors? Could listening to their stories be the first step? This is Seacoast Church, and there's way more to talk about.
I mean, Amy, like, she will be talking about something serious, and then she goes comic and doesn't change the tone or anything. So I'm like, trying.
That's true. And I should work on that.
Well, no, I do that to other people. So
say,
it's a taste of my own medicine.
Yeah.
That's a taste of my own. Yeah. Well, welcome to the Seacoast Podcast, everybody. We are here with Amy Worley, Roy Jakes, Lynn Stroy. Roy, are you still upset about Amy joining the team? You did say that you wanted to. hey.
Did you have to put me on the same side as her?
All right, theology. I mean, I studied theology too, but you're the smarter one.
Lord.
If she talks about what she fasted, because we're wrapping up 21 days of prayer and fasting, does she lose all the blessings and all the good that came out of it? If I were to ask her what she fasts and she tells everybody? You don't have to, by the way.
That's
your own
question.
Daggone business. But if she answers my question, hey, what'd you fast? Because it's pretty unbelievable. And she says it. All her blessings are gone.
All
she
gone.
Has to start all over, do
all
another
gone.
3 weeks.
Uh-oh.
All gone.
Oops.
So
sorry.
There's no way you're going to tell us then if...
Well, I've already told other people, though, because what I was fasting, they asked.
So this is Lee, your husband... Mm-hmm. Fasted everything but water for the past 3 weeks, correct?
Yes, he's on day, I think, 23 of water-only fast.
And your water and coffee?
I stopped at 7. But I did also fast Instagram. That's what I fasted.
Gotcha.
And so I started getting, because I have not been on there, I've gotten texts like, hey, why didn't you respond to this? I sent this. And I was like, oh, because I fasted it. So that's why I had to tell people. But I did do 7 days, coffee and water, and I literally almost died.
And Lee's doing 40.
His goal is 40. He just felt like God told him to do 40. And so until he hears or feels something else, then he's going to go.
Props to Lee.
Yeah.
Man.
It is hard because we've had like birthdays, cakes. He's on a convention this weekend going, and it's going to be all you can eat fancy stuff. And he's going to have to just bring his water and electrolytes. So.
Dang.
Yeah.
Wow. Sounds great.
Pray for him.
Roy, you're fasting gambling and cigarettes?
Oh.
Just gambling.
Not the cigarettes. Yeah. Actually, I'm smoking outside. All three of us are outside. Do you smell it?
Have you heard Lynn's cigarette story?
I have.
Yeah,
I have.
Okay. All right. So about 2 episodes ago, I'm pretty sure how all these laid out when you're listening to this episode. About 2 weeks, 2 episodes ago, talked to 2 black women, which... Lynn, I'm putting this stuff together. I'm like, we're talking about race stuff again.
I am always in the race conversations against my will.
Listen to this. I told the intro conversation for that episode, I ended it thinking that it was such a funny joke. I said, Lynn, you gave me some beef jerky, brought a gift. And I said, I gave you the gift of keeping you out of race conversation. She's like, except we just talked about race.
Exactly.
Did you guys get a chance to listen to those wonderful ladies? Like, I really appreciated Lynn's feedback for me. And just some behind the scenes. I mean, I don't know if you can. I'm pretty laid back and I... basically my demeanor, and I was still in this situation. But when I listened to the initial recording, I mean, I'll say this, that what you guys heard, there was definitely just some bad podcasting deleted. Like, it just wasn't good conversation. That was on me. But some of the stuff that I said, So Lynn's feedback, and I want to get into some of it here in a second, but I want to ask you, you gave all this feedback on some things that I could have said differently, maybe should have said differently, all of it given in grace, but then you ended up by saying, but I wouldn't touch the episode. I'd release it as is.
Yeah.
Why?
Because I always have to balance, did I cringe because of what's in me? Or is this something that is like broader objective? And I'm not objective when it comes to race.
Yeah.
I'd love to say that I am, but I'm not. And so the longer that we've been friends and the longer that I've had these conversations, I've just had to like step back and say, okay, is this hot button enough that it would offend most of our viewers or it would hurt someone? Is it going to hurt someone? And I don't think any of those things would hurt anyone, but is it going to make them cringe? Probably. Will it spark a conversation? Probably. And is this Lynn's personal opinion or is this, you know, does this apply broadly?
Yeah.
And so at the end of the day, I felt like it wasn't going to hurt anyone. It probably was my personal opinion, but it would definitely spark conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
You weren't the only one, Lynn. I cringed too.
Yeah. Yeah. What were some cringy parts for you?
Yeah. The you folks.
You folks.
Oh yeah. That was, yeah, that was definitely a cringe.
And here, yeah, here's what I'll say about that. I've got to get away from it, but I feel like I celebrate race and as I get older in such a deep way, I'm celebrating it.
So
when I say you guys, I mean that in an endearing, I love it. I can't believe you look so young. I understand the feedback, but that's what I was getting across.
I know. I think you'll agree. There's nothing about Joey that's racist. That's I know Joey. I know Joey's heart is good in all of it. I think honestly, what you said a little bit, it's funny. You just said you're getting nervous again. When you get nervous, you turn to comedy.
Like
that's
I do.
Your oh yeah, that's your default. I mean that your default is to laugh your way through uncomfortable situations.
I don't even know that about myself. And you're sure that's not I'm trying to make people laugh all the time, any opportunity I get?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It could be. But in a conversation like that that feels kind of like sometimes the humor it just doesn't translate real well, I guess, mm-hmm, is what I would say. I don't know. So I know what you meant in that moment. My guess is had we been sitting around a table and it just been me, you, and T wouldn't have thought anything of like, mm-hmm, but in that conversation, I don't know if you, especially because I did watch the video.
Oh, I didn't watch it.
And I don't know if you, but I watched their faces and there were a couple moments where, mm-hmm, I think it was uncomfortable for,
yeah,
them.
Yeah, and that's what I do, that's what I never want to, yeah, happen. And
I could have misread that, but I just...
And maybe I felt that. Now, we're literally talking about people who are on the podcast and they're not here to talk, you know, for themselves. But unless they were being dishonest, they had a pleasant experience. We're very thankful. Some things could have rubbed them the wrong way, but the whole experience, you know, as a whole was a positive,
yeah,
one. But yeah, that's interesting. And I'm nervous I go that route. Yeah.
Again, I know your heart in all of it.
Yeah.
And anybody that really knows you knows that as well. So,
yeah. So there's no way we can avoid the whole cancel culture stuff. And I don't really think about myself cancel culture. I think of famous people when it comes to cancel culture. But it's not for me, I do think that there's a huge increase of fear in being canceled, saying something where everybody's outraged. For me, it really does go to, I don't want this person to be uncomfortable or to take something the wrong way. But I also have to be honest that I am now a product of what society has been for the last 10 years. And it's in the back of my mind. And I just can't help it. 100%. You know, so when I'm in a conversation like that, I would have never had that conversation without you and T there. Never. Because I feel like, obviously, I'm sure those ladies love me. We're part of the same church. But I feel like y'all are my advocates who can watch my back. And if I were to say something, really, that's right. You weren't part of that conversation. Yeah. T was.
Remember, you gave her a gift.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Of not being a part of the conversation.
Right.
But just talking about it before and after.
Yeah.
And
so I did not cut you a break
at all. Now pulling you into the debrief.
Yeah. Good job, Joey.
I feel that we are more sensitive as a culture, and I mean that in a good way, like sensitive towards others and their feelings. But do you think that we've also created an unnecessarily paranoid culture? And can we get to a more caring culture without the paranoia?
Well, and part of that is in anything we do, there's going to be an extreme. You know, so people are going to take anything, you know, where it shouldn't go or too far. But even as believers, there's always that dying to self. And so even when you're like having a conversation, the point isn't, am I being politically correct? The point is, am I hurting somebody in front of me? Yeah. But if you're uncomfortable and it happens, you also know we're going to hurt each other. Like, that's who we are. But being able to be in relationship to discuss it, to be able to, if I'm offended, to say, Joey, I'm offended. To be able to say, hey, I said this. Did it rub you? Like, you texting me and saying, hey, will you listen to this and tell me what you think? And being open to feedback. Right. And so I think that is the difference for believers. Is that, yeah, we're in this culture, but we don't have to be defined by the culture. We can just approach those things and think, okay, how do I interact with people who are not like me?
Right.
I think the hard part is, and even the point I'm about to make is even part of the stereotype, is we got to remember that what offends one person isn't necessarily what offends everybody.
Yeah.
Again, that would be the stereotype, like, oh, well, if Lynn's offended, all Black people must be offended. Well, that's not the case. Lynn can be offended. It could rub her the wrong way. I don't like to joke. I honestly don't like to joke about race. It's just something I don't like to. Because again, I know, number one, I know what was in my heart at one, you know, in growing, you know, I know what I experienced growing up. Other people, they're fine joking about it. T's one that he's fine joking about it. And he and I talked a lot about this. I don't even like to participate in that. But he does. And he thinks it's funny. We had a case recently, right, from the platform. One of our own speakers made a joke, and I didn't appreciate it personally. I know a lot of Black people that they thought it was the funniest thing in the world that he said that. And so we can't assume that just because one person's offended by something that everybody, you know, we're all individuals. And y'all talked about that a little bit on that last podcast. You know, Lynn doesn't represent all Black people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she's an individual. And if I know something offends you and bothers you, then my responsibility is certainly not to do that. Certainly not in your presence.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be one thing if T and I want to joke about something, but I know it offends you, then I can joke about that there, but I don't joke about it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I do. I mean, and for the most part, because I do, like, I don't represent in the same way that I can't say Roy represents every white man,
right?
You know, in America. And so it is an individual thing. But then that goes back to the relationship of, like, you're not going to do something with somebody in close proximity that you think might rub them the wrong way.
Yeah.
But also keeping the tension of you're not going to know all the time. You know, like, I told you in that text, like, if you had said that to me, I would have been like, Black don't crack, you know, right. And it would have been like, you know, like, I would have made that joke. But again, you know me, and like, it's a different dynamic. And there are people that I wouldn't say that to because that relationship isn't there. So it really is like a one-on-one. It can't be collective.
Right. If you could have a white person represent all white people, who would it be? And same with you. And same with you, Amy. If you could have one
if
Black
person. If I could have a white person represent all of you.
I'm going Dolly Parton. If there's got to be a white person.
You don't like Dolly Parton?
She's such a... I like Dolly. I'm not sure.
She has given so much. She's a generous person.
You have Mother Teresa and you're going with Dolly Parton.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mother Teresa passed
Lord
away.
Lord have mercy.
Do y'all not know what Dolly Parton does for her community?
All
right, guys.
Books.
Dolly Parton next week. On hey, all joking aside, I think it's pretty neat. We're going to be talking to Wendy Liu. So if you're a Little House on the Prairie fan, and I know Lynn knows this. Did you find out in Israel? That's my all-time favorite show, like by a mile.
Mm-hmm.
Love Little House on the Prairie.
Yes.
All right, so this is where I'm humble, and I'm going to let Lynn describe how gleeful I was in this conversation coming up. I was pretty gleeful.
Oh, yeah, you were.
Yeah, I was excited.
You were really excited. We had to calm him down before we started the recording.
Oh, about the Little House on the Prairie?
Grace on Little House on the Prairie, the actual kid that I saw at the Ingalls table?
Yeah.
I mean, of course. All right, so Wendy, Lou, Baby Grace on Little House on the Prairie.
Awesome.
Thank you, guys. Lynn, honestly, thank you for helping me out with all of that stuff.
Anytime, Joey.
See you, everybody. All right, Wendy, it's Wendy Liu Lee, right?
Yes.
All right. So let me tell you this. We've had a platinum selling artists on here, Brian Welch of the metal band Korn. I'm a big hip-hop guy, and we've had Grammy Award-winning hip-hop. He's a Christian also, Lecrae. I'm a big fan.
I saw that.
This is the most excited I've ever been.
It's true.
On a Seacoast podcast.
More than Lecrae? Are you joking me?
He's been talking about it. So he's like, you guys are not going to believe this.
when I got an email response from you, I immediately texted my mom, dad, and my brother. I'm going to talk to a cast member of the Little House on the Prairie. I mean, I'll give you a quick rundown. Cool. Then I want to get into some Little House on the Prairie talk. Did you watch Little House on the Prairie,
Lynn? I did. But I have a vague memory of it. And so my family did watch it, but I couldn't tell you anything specific.
I think at the end of this conversation, you're going to want to watch all the Little House on the Prairie episodes.
But
here you go, Wendy. So I remember some summer afternoons at 12 o'clock. It was a routine for my brother and I, and this probably went through middle and high school. My mom would, yes, she was a stay-at-home mom, and she did make our sandwiches, and everybody makes fun of me for that. My mom cut my waffles when I was in high school. I didn't ask her to. She just wanted to. But anyway, we would watch Little House on the Prairie every single lunch during the summer. In college, I got my girlfriend and my best friend hooked. We would program the VCR to record while we were in class, and then we would come home and watch Little House on the Prairie, and then I may or may not have a Little House on the Prairie tattoo.
No way.
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah, I've got...
I have seen Little House on the Prairie tattoos before, but never from a podcast host.
Well, why don't you tell our listeners who you are on Little House on the Prairie, first of all.
Yes. Hello. My name is Wendy, and I played Baby Grace Ingalls. That is Michael Landon's youngest daughter. I appeared on the show from season 5 through season 8. So like the second half of the series.
So I was reading on your website how it seems as if you watch Little House on the Prairie similar to me as far as just loving it, but you've got to see it through a different lens, because obviously there's some episodes with you in it, but I am curious, like, what are your memories of being on the set? My brother pointed out to me that I think you and I are just days apart as far as when we were born, and it was great context, because every time I see you on Little House on the Prairie, I'm thinking, when this episode came out, that's how old I was. Okay. Do you have memories?
Yes, I do have some, but I kind of explain my memories. They're kind of threefold. One is that we were there. Okay, I say we. I better make this clear. Yeah. My sister and I, Brenda, we are twins, and we shared the role, as was very common on Little House and other shows when you were using very small children. So, but we were there, so we remember things. But also, like you said, I watched Little House on the Prairie my whole life. I remember my very first time, actually remember watching it. I was about 4 years old, and I couldn't believe that we were on TV, you know? And then my mother just has been telling me stories for my whole life. And I feel like every time we're together, she tells me a new story. So I have various ways to remember. And sometimes they get blurred. To be honest, I'm thinking, did I watch this? Did I hear about it? Or did I actually experience it? So I remember a lot through a lot of different avenues. I guess that's what I would say.
Yeah. I think I can relate to that, because there are days in my childhood that I remember, but there's also photographs of that same day. One of them that sticks out in my mind is my 4-year-old birthday. There's a picture of me and my dad napping on the couch together. I remember that day, but I also looked at photo albums my whole childhood. So I don't know if I really remember that or not. All right, Lynn, and to the best of your ability, describe what kind of show Little House on the Prairie is. Like, just snapshot, if you had to guess, like, what kind of show?
Like a family show.
Family show?
Yeah, I just think of like family, and like by the end of the episode, something was solved and everybody felt good.
Yeah, tearjerker kind of stuff. Was it pretty intense? Yep.
I don't remember emotion.
All right.
But I am younger than you.
Yes.
And you guys were 4.
Yes. All right. So I'm going to dispel a common misconception about Little House on the Prairie, because and it's funny, Wendy, when people ask me my favorite TV show and I say Little House on the Prairie, they give a double take, and then I think they think that I'm joking. And I'm like, no, for real. But a lot of people just think is bubblegum and roses, happy-go-lucky, surfacey, everybody's smiling and everything. Check this out, Lynn. There's an episode where a main character gets mauled by a grizzly bear. There's an episode where a main character gets kidnapped by the James brothers, Jesse James. There's an episode where a main character gets shot, put in a coma. His dad goes after the bad guys. There's a this will blow your mind. There's a two-parter where there's a dude with a clown face who sexually assaulted a young girl, and she was pregnant. And then her dad saw her as, you know, kind of spoiled goods and rotten, even though it was done against her. There is an episode where a dude loses his mind, kills his wife and kid, and then takes the main characters hostage. And then there's an episode with Johnny Cash. And then there's an episode where one of the main characters is hooked on morphine. And Michael Landon and the writers and the producers, they dealt with racism, I think, in a way that was ahead of its time, big time. They addressed equality between male and female. You know, what's crazy is, do you remember the episode? Of course you do. But the one with the James brothers and the debating in the classroom about the Civil War and both sides and everything, if that is not a foreshadowing of the polarity that we have today, where we do not try to understand both perspectives. And that's what daggum Miss Beadle was trying to teach the students. Learn from other people's perspectives. Right, Lynn?
That's incredible.
You're amazed right now how excited I am.
I am. He's not kidding when he says he's been the most excited about this.
I have to add one thing to your list, and that is that Ray Bolger, who played the Scarecrow on Wizard of Oz, was a common guest star, and that is huge to also. But yeah, there was, you know, the death of children on the show. There was infertility. There was all sorts of things. And every episode I say either would make you cry, make you laugh out loud, or maybe both by the time the credits rolled. So Little House had everything, but also what it had, which is so different than I think any other show, was this deep sense, and faith was what held this family together. And that was huge to see on television. There's one episode where Carolyn and Charles are quoting Psalms 23 in its entirety. I mean, it is wow.
Yeah.
So it's like no other show. There are other shows that show families, but not in the way that Little House
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was thinking about the episode where Laura is, I forgot what his name was, but it's he was seen as kind of a haunted guy in a haunted house. And she literally shares the gospel to him. And he, tears, says, "Help me believe. Please help me believe." And here's what's crazy, Lynn, is Michael Landon, so that's Charles, the dad, and basically Little House on the Prairie came from his mind, was Jewish. And that's what I wanted to ask you is, how did he come up with such deep Christian principles that are so moving, and yet that's not even his faith? I mean...
Well, here's what I'm going to say, is that Michael Landon was brilliant. Brilliant actor, brilliant producer, brilliant writer. And he knew the faith of Charles Ingalls. And so he wanted that faith to be portrayed throughout this series. And he did. Now, he is a man of faith. He was a spiritual man. That doesn't mean that he was a Christian man, although I don't know how he could write the episodes that he wrote and direct what he did without, you know, having a very high view of God, for sure. But he was an actor. Actors are brilliant, and they convince us. People go, he had to be a Christian. And I'm like, well, he didn't have to be. He's just a brilliant actor, you know? But he was a great guy.
Yeah. Yeah. How'd you get the role?
How did
you two get the role, I should say? You and Brenda.
Yes. Okay, so there's kind of this unknown story is that when baby Grace is born at the end of season 4, it is not us because they had not found baby Grace yet. And it had to be twins, and they had not found twins because I don't know many 6-month-old twins that have headshots and have an agent. So that's where the trouble came in. And my grandmother was friends with Kent McRae, who was the executive producer, and Sue McRae, they were married, casting director, and they played bridge together, and they were having lunch one day and, you know, talking about Little House. Because what else do you talk about in, you know, the late 70s? And they can't find a baby Grace. They don't. Yeah, there's nothing else,
to talk about.
Yeah, but my grandma was very much like a, you know, kind of little groupie of like, so what's the show? What's going on? You know, and my grandmother said, well, what about my granddaughters? Are you kidding me? They're twins. They've got blonde hair and blue eyes. And she said, oh my gosh, you're right. And so they showed a picture of us to Michael Landon and he said, bring him in. And we met Michael Landon, played on the floor with him for like 3 minutes. And he said, these are my girls. Dang. And that was it. Wow.
Did you find out later what went off in his mind that made it so convincing for him right off the top that you guys were the ones?
Well, I'm just going to use my deductive reasoning,
yeah.
But he didn't have any other choice. And
That's a very humble answer. How'd you get the role? We showed up and he didn't have a choice.
Well, there were no other twin girls that fit the criteria. And I think the playing on the floor with us was, are they going to be okay with strangers? Like, are they pleasant? Like, can they, you know, just relax? Because, you know, some 6-month-old babies, they sit on the floor with a stranger and they're like, get me away. And so, and I don't think Michael Landon had very much time, to be honest. I think this was like crunch time. We have got to get this settled. So, yeah. It was the grace of God. Like he really, for some reason, chose us to be baby Grace.
Yeah.
And I can't really explain that.
Yeah. And I was wondering the third oldest sister, as I'm saying, yeah, for sure. Carrie, they had the same thing going on. There was two actresses. Is that because kids are so unpredictable in their temperament and mood and that sort of thing? You want to have a backup? Like what's the deal there?
No, it's not that. The reason is the child labor laws. So when you are 2 and under, you can only work 4 hours a day, but 2 of those hours are in the dressing room, which sounds funny that the baby has to go to makeup, but you actually do because of the light and the shining and all these things, getting dressed, all these things take a lot of time. And so that only means 2 hours of screen time a day, and they need more time than that.
Gosh.
Especially with babies, because babies don't always do what you want them to do. So you may have to take it, you know, a few takes to get what you want at the dinner table or whatever you're doing. So it's really about the amount of time that they can work.
Yeah. Yeah. I had no
four
idea.
4 hours instead of 2.
No idea. Yeah. And there are scenes where either you or your sister are actually crying. And obviously, nobody is going to do something to you guys we need them to cry. So let's slap her. But how did they just pick an opportune time that, oh, she's upset. We need her to be upset. Let's put her on the camera.
Well, almost always when baby Grace is crying, it's me.
That's amazing.
They realize that I was a little more shy. I was a little more scared of the lights. And so if there was a series of shots that either they wanted baby Grace to cry, which sometimes they did, or if it was okay if baby Grace cried, well, they would schedule me for those times. There was one time, it's like the famous baby Grace meltdown on screen. And it's me, but the way they planned this, because they wanted it to be very obvious that Pa could not handle the children.
Right. And he made so food that you hated, right?
They put pepper in my oatmeal.
Oh my gosh.
They asked my mom and she said it was fine.
That's why you didn't want to eat Pa's food. Now I know.
Ever again. I never ate from Pa again. So that's, people say, how did they make you, how did they get you to do that? And I said, no, they just, that was real.
That's awesome. Oh, that is so good. That is so good. So who are, and hopefully you enjoy talking about Little House on the Prairie because we're talking about it a lot. We'll move on here in a second. But I do have some selfish questions that I got to know for myself. But who are you close to now? Because I see that you guys have reunions and you are at such an age to where I don't think there was a whole, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't seem like you can have a whole lot of relational / emotional connection with adult cast members when you're the age that you were.
Exactly. Yes. We didn't have much interaction with the cast. I will say that obviously Karen Grassley and Michael Landon were my parents on screen. So I hung out with them a lot. And Melissa Gilbert, who played Laura, she was always carrying us around. So I would say that those three we had the most interaction with. And of course, the Carey twins, because we're both twins. So we followed them around the set. So, but beyond that, we didn't have a lot of interaction actually when we were on the show. But 23 years after the show ended, we were reunited with the cast. And then our lives totally changed because we started traveling with the cast and getting to know them as adults. And now 19 years later, one of my best friends is Charlotte Stewart, who played Miss Beadle. We were just together last weekend. We text each other. We stay in hotel room everywhere we go. I kind of take care of her. She takes care of me. She's like one of my best friends now, which she's like my grandma best friend. It's totally weird because she's 82 and she's a total hoot.
Miss Beadle is 82 years old. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But also, Allison Ongram, she played, Nellie Olson, and she is amazing. She really is like a connector of people. And she really invited my sister and I to actually join these cast reunions. So without her, I would have, you know, never be doing what I'm doing. So there's lots of others. But those I'd say were maybe the main two that I'm really close to now. Dean Butler, he's a great friend. He played Almanzo. I don't know. I could keep going, but you might not want to hear all that.
I would sit here and listen to it for hours. All right. So a couple of questions that are kind of personal. I want to know, when we see the little house on the TV screen, where is it in reference to the town? Because obviously we're made to believe that you guys have a long walk to the town, to the school. But as far as the set is concerned, is that little house close to the church and the mercantile and the mill and all of that?
No, it's up over the hill. So it's a little bit of a walk. It is a walk. Oh, wow. I'd say it's maybe between a quarter mile and a half mile, which is pretty far.
Yeah.
It's pretty far. Sure. They would, you know, cart us over, or we'd run up over the hill. If you could take the, you know, if you take the road, take a little longer, but if you go up over the hill, maybe that's why they always went up over the hill. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's actually going to be a, reunion in March in Simi Valley, which is where it was filmed. And you're going to be able to go out to where they filmed it. And they're actually going to put up the buildings of each where they actually were. And you can walk through the town, which is super cool.
Wow. That is cool. That is super cool. Do you have any like keepsakes from the set or like any personal memorabilia from your time?
The only thing that I have from the set is this little chair. And there's a story that I talk about in my book about the time when I climbed up into one of these big chairs and fell out of the back. And within 2 or 3 days, we had these little blue director's chairs, like the size for a, you know, 2-year-old, 3-year-old with our names on the back. So I have my chair with Wendy on the back. Other than that, the only other thing I have is a jacket that Michael Landon signed and gave to us from the set of Highway to Heaven when we went and visited him. So those are the only two things I have. So property, costumes, all of those things were not owned by you. They were owned by NBC. So these things would, you know, move on to appear in a different show. So you, most of the people that have those things, like, literally, like, shoplifted them off the set.
Yeah.
Unless Michael Landon personally gave you, like, I know Almanzo has, or Dean has the hat, and Michael gifted him with the hat that he wore, and then he actually got the hat that Michael wore. So he has both of those hats, which is like amazing.
Yeah.
But that was because they were gifted to him at the end when Michael said, "Who cares? I'm just taking them."
Yeah. Yeah. How, why was it that Michael Landon wrote him and Karen Gressley out of the show near the end? Was it to just spark some new interest because of ratings going down, or what was the story behind that?
Yes. So it's always about ratings. And so that's why all of a sudden there might be a very controversial episode coming, or that's why James and Cassandra all of a sudden come on the scene because the kids are growing up and there's not much more to do in the Ingalls house. Like, it's always kind of about ratings. And so the ratings were going down, but also at the same time, Michael Landon was ready to move on to his next show, which was Highway to Heaven. So he's always thinking forward. And so season 9, which was the season where, you know, Charles and Carolyn move away, is this reboot. And it's supposed to be the story of Laura and Almanzo, and they're the main family. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so it just didn't work, and it's hard and sad that it didn't work, but I don't think people could get over the fact that Ma and Pa were gone, and they just couldn't embrace it the way that they did before.
Gotcha.
So it was really about Highway to Heaven beginning. And And, you know, some of these actors were ready to move on.
Sure.
8 years is a really long time to be on a series. And some of them want to do something else,
right.
You know? They don't want to be typecast as, you know, the Prairie Lady forever.
Yeah.
So
tell me if I've got any of these details wrong. But Lynn, the geniusness, is that a word? Did I make up a word? Geniusness?
I think just the genius.
The genius of Michael Landon. So I think that they basically had to clear the set when the show was over. So listen, they made a special movie where this really horrible guy comes into the town and basically plays around with the law and legitimately owns the town and says, "You guys can stay. You're just going to be working for me now." And they're like, "Are you kidding me?" So it breaks their heart. They're like, "We don't even own this town anymore." So Laura, in a rage, starts hitting the windows in her big old boarding house because she's so angry, which gives the idea of blowing up the town with dynamite. So there's a whole episode, and you actually see these buildings in real life being blown up by dynamite. And the beauty of that show is the bad guy, I'll just call him the bad guy, I think it was Lassiter or something, the bad guy brought other leaders of other towns that basically he was doing the same thing to them too. He was taking over their towns, and he wanted them to see how legit it was. Well, those other people saw what the people of Walnut Grove did by blowing up the buildings, and they said, "This is exactly what you're going to get if you do the same thing to us." And so at the very end, I think Reverend Alden says that that Walnut Grove did not die in vain. But did I have that correct?
Yes. Let me give you
ish.
I won't go into that part of it, but I'll give you a back, you know, behind the scenes thing of why Michael Landon wrote this in. Okay. So Michael Landon was a little upset that NBC was canceling the show. And so just like the costumes and everything on the set of Little House would all move on and be used on another Western. And Michael Landon did not want to give them that satisfaction. And so he wrote into this episode and he destroyed all the sets.
Which so they were literally actually destroyed.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I knew that. I knew they were really destroyed.
Yes, the only buildings that were not blown up were the church and the little house. But other than that, he blew everything up so that they would not. It was kind of his like, really? You're going to do this? Well, take that. And so that's why he wrote into it. Not going to die in vain. And so it was really a kind of a little jab in the stomach or a punch in the face to say, you're not canceling us without us going down in flames. The bad guy was, I think, a railroad guy. So basically the railroad was going to go right through and something to that effect.
Yeah. It'll be hard to fit all of this in somewhat of a snapshot, but I do want to get to 2015. Where does Wendy and Brenda go from Little House on the Prairie? Did you guys toy around with any other acting, or was that the end of your acting career? Like, where did y'all go from there?
So Little House was over at the end of season 8 because Mom and Pa moved away and Baby Grace had to go with them. I wanted to stay, but they just wouldn't let us. Yeah. So, and then we did one commercial, and the commercial was like super fun. I thought it was fun, but my mom was pregnant with my little sister, and she just realized that commercials were just nothing compared to Little House on the Prairie. The directors and they didn't care about us. They didn't care what our names were. They didn't care if we were hungry or tired. It was just, you do this now. And we left that one day shoot, and my mom called their agent and said, we're done. We don't want to do this anymore because nothing can compare to Little House. Like, we didn't know how good we had it on Little House and just the family atmosphere. And so we were done, and we graduated from acting and went to kindergarten, and literally we never ever did anything again. Besides, every church Christmas program and every lip sync in elementary school and talent shows. But other than that, our careers were completely done by the time we went to kindergarten. And we just grew up in a normal home with a normal family. I will say that my biological father left in the middle of Little House. And right after Little House was over, my mom married a wonderful Christian man who raised us literally like Charles Ingalls raised his family. And so I just knew that we were going to be okay. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Michael Landon really like taught us what a family was and what like the foundations of what family looks like. And so I couldn't believe it when I was 6 years old and I had a dad who came home every night and we ate dinner together and it was like Little House.
Wow.
So, that's really, and we just, moved away from Hollywood and grew up like normal.
As a grown up, do you look back on that with Thanksgiving that you weren't in the spotlight all these years? Like, do you prefer, you can't know, I guess, because you only had one life experience, but are you glad that it happened that way?
Yes. I respect my mom so much because our lives would have been so different. And I don't know. I don't know what would have happened. We lived a very simple, simple life and I'm grateful for it.
So 2015, what was your life like?
2015, my son was 11. My daughter was 8 years old. I'd been married to my husband for 16 years. And all of a sudden I was having terrible headaches and dizziness and confusion and feeling like, what is going on? I'm not well. It took about 6 weeks for my doctor to finally order a brain scan, and they found a tumor in the ventricles of my brain. And all of a sudden, my life stopped and changed drastically. So yeah, that's kind of how it started. About 11 days after I got the diagnosis, I had surgery. And the surgery was very successful. It was a benign tumor, which is very good news. I woke up and I remembered everyone. In fact, I woke up and my stepdad said, how are you doing? And I stopped and I thought, and I said, this is the best day of my life. Yeah. It was like one of those where you wake up and you just can't believe you're alive and you can't believe that you remember everyone and just being so grateful that God had just he wasn't done with me. I guess that's, it was this, okay, so what is it that you want me to do now? That's kind of how I felt. And also I was not in nearly as much pain as I had been. So it was just this total relief.
What kind of risk was there? Because so you're saying it was benign, but there's it's still having to do with your brain. So it sounds like there was potential for you to have some pretty severe memory loss.
Yes. Anytime you do a craniotomy, which basically means they cut your scalp open, you know, go through your skull and go into your brain matter. Anytime that happens, it is a risk. And we didn't know it was benign until about a week after the surgery. So even before the surgery, we're just praying, please God, don't let it, like, please let's not make it be cancer, you know, because then not only are you have to, you know, endure the surgery and the recovery, but you also have to endure chemo and radiation and just all that. It's a whole second journey. So there's always a risk. Probably about a week before my surgery, we're sitting at the dinner table and I told my kids, this is why mom's been, you know, in bed so much. This is why mom's forgetting everything. I have this tumor. And my son looked me square in the face and he said, Mom, are you going to die? And I said, honey, I don't know.
Gosh,
I'm very blunt with my kids. 11. Yeah. And so I've always been very honest with my kids. And I said, you know what? I don't know. I hope not. But you know what? You have people around you that love you. They're going to take care of you. You know, and I just said, let's just pray that mom's going to wake up and remember you. He was like, okay. And it's funny because my daughter was 8 and her birthday was about 2 weeks after my surgery. And she knew this. And she said, she didn't ask if I was going to die. She said, Mom, can I still have my birthday party? And I said, yep, we can have your birthday party. So, you know, yeah, everybody deals with it differently. But there was definitely a moment of like, okay, this is really big. And I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I just don't know. And that's when I think you have to just put your hands, put your life in God's hands and just believe that whatever he does is okay. And I really had that peace of like, my life is in the hands of God Almighty, not in the hands of a surgeon, not in the hands of anyone else. So I'd never been in that spot before to say, Lord, here I am, do whatever you want to do. I'd never like done that. And so it was really a big moment for me.
Yeah.
How has that changed post surgery, post recovery, anything that you deal with in life at that moment of being like, God, I'm in your hands. Like, how has that changed the rest of your life to date?
Yes. I'd like to say that in the instant that it happens, I say that, but you know, I do kind of revert back to my old self sometimes, but I remind myself, whoa, God is faithful. Mm-hmm. He's been faithful in the past. He will be faithful now and forever. So I do go back to that experience so many times. It's a lot easier when other people are going through things. And I'm like, no, God's got you, you know? But yes, definitely, you know, I have to catch myself and go, whoa, wait a minute. Why are you worrying about this? Like, God has you. I think we learn from our past, and that's why it's always so good to remember, you know, to remember. Just Monday, so just 3 days, was it 2 days ago, was my 8-year anniversary of my surgery.
Wow.
And I had this necklace that I made, and it said trust on it. And so every year, like the week of my surgery, I wear this necklace because it was like, I didn't take this thing off because it just reminded me, okay, just trust that God's got you. Trust that God's got you. And so I really believe in those visual reminders of remembering where God's brought you.
That's good.
Yeah. How about physically? Has there been any lingering effects?
I have headaches a lot. Dang. So that is definitely my kind of, you know, I feel like everyone has a little bit of a weakness, you know, everyone has a lot of people do anyway. Like if I don't drink enough water, get enough sleep, if I'm stressed, I get a headache. It's just, you know, it's just like kind of my thing, but my scans have all been clear. I don't even have to have scans anymore. So it's, you know, been 8 years. So really I am totally good, except for that I just deal with this headache thing.
Yeah.
But my grandma had headaches. My mom has headaches. My sisters have headaches. I don't think that it's totally because of the surgery. I think it's just in my genes.
Right. When you hang out with the rest of the cast members, how aware are they of your deep faith in God and getting you through all of that? And is it some, like, are you known as, Wendy's, Christian? And
yes, I am. In fact, if we have a Q&A and somebody in the audience asks a spiritual question, they all look at me and say, well, Wendy, why don't you answer that one? Yes, they've all read my books. They all know that I am a believer. And even in August, we were in Kentucky and we had our very first old-fashioned Walnut Grove church service. And I got to stand in for Reverend Alden.
Nice.
And the cast was in the audience along with a whole bunch of fans. And we sang Bringing in the Sheaves and Onward Christian Soldiers and shared about the love of Jesus, So they totally know. And a few of them have been in several church services with me. Allison says, I only go to church with Wendy. Other than that, I can stay away.
you mentioned on your website, struggles with anxiety, rejection, comparison. That's a lot to tackle, but maybe pick one and share what that struggle looked like.
I guess I'll pick, oh goodness, which one should I pick? I can pick them all. I'll just say a sentence or two about each one.
Sure.
Number one, rejection. That was my biological father leaving, and that was just really hard. Comparison, I have a twin sister who is amazing and good at everything.
It doesn't cry on the set.
Yes. So I really dealt with comparison my whole life and believing that God had something significant for me to do. And honestly, after my surgery, I knew that God had something for me to do, and it was totally different than my sister. Mm-hmm. So that's comparison. Anxiety. Yes, I had my first panic attack after surgery in an MRI tube, and it was terrifying. I have dealt with that. Mm-hmm. I also have a lot of grief in my life. My stepdad, who was the one who married my mom after the show, died of a heart attack. I found him. It was super tragic.
Oh, no.
And really stayed with me for a long time. That was in 2006.
Dang.
So it was about 9 years before.
And you found him?
I was with him and found him. Oh, my mom was gone. It's just, so yeah, there's a lot of stuff. I say that, I experienced a lot of what the Ingalls family experienced, ups and downs, joys and sorrows. And that's what life is, life is a series of those things.
Yeah. What initiated, and I don't even know how it happened, when it happened, but obviously at some point you decided to write the devotional based on the series, and we'll talk about Red Tail Feathers as well. But what happened to make you be like, yeah, I want to go public as Baby Grace and share my life with people?
It really started after my surgery, and I wasn't actually writing the devotional first. I was actually writing the memoir, which turned into Red Tail Feathers, because I just felt like God was saying, you need to write this story down. And so I started writing that book, and I went to a writer's conference, and nobody wanted it. But the last night of the conference, I met a acquisitions editor from HarperCollins, who was a crazy Little House fan, just like you, Joey.
Yes.
And she starts talking to me. She's totally fangirling. I mean, it was just hilarious. And then, of course, what you do at a writer's conference, especially a Christian writer's conference, is you always ask, oh, so what do you write? Because that's why you're there. And so I told her, and she said, oh, man, I wish I could help you, but I'm a devotional editor. And I was like, oh, I actually have an idea for a devotional. So she said, oh, my goodness, I want to publish this book. So she ended up publishing the devotional first. And I'm so glad that nobody liked the memoir, because I actually really needed more time to tell the story that I wanted to tell. I don't think I would have done it justice. And I also needed to develop as a person and as an author to even be able to tell the story that I told in the memoir. So as soon as the devotional was published, I went back to work on the memoir, and that took, you know, another 4 years. And then the memoir just came out this last August. So
yeah, and the
Red Tail Feathers is about finding grace in every chapter of life. So I go through the chapters of my life and how I have found grace in each one, no matter how hard, how tragic, how beautiful, there's grace in everyone.
What's Red Tail Feathers? How'd you come up with that title?
Well, you will find out in the intro chapter.
There you go.
Basically,
there you go.
Basically what happened is the week after my surgery, we went to find out if the tumor was cancerous. And my husband and I we got great news, but we weren't doing too well. We were not on the same page. And we're sitting in the car, and all of a sudden there's this little bird, and I'm mesmerized by this little bird. And the reason is because after brain surgery, your senses are at an all-time high. You see things you've never seen. You smell
really?
Things that you've never smelled. It is wild. And so I see this little bird, and I'm completely mesmerized. And my husband's like, what are you talking about? I don't see it. And all of a sudden the bird flew out from this tree and landed right on the side mirror. And we were like looking at the bird like, oh my goodness. And he turned around, and there are these red tail feathers. And it was like this sign from God saying, you don't even know what's going on here. Mm. Like, I have this all planned. You just have to open your eyes and see me in this moment, you know, see me in the tragedy, see me in the pain. I'm here with you. So I really encourage people, what are the red tail feathers in your life? Because God shows up in all kinds of ways. And for me, it was these red tail feathers, this bright feathers sitting there saying, I'm with you. So that's kind of my thing. Where's the grace in your life? You can find it. You just have to open up your eyes to see it.
That's so good.
Yeah, for sure. And the devotional, when you say based on the television series, do you incorporate like episodes and stuff that happened on the TV series with the devotions?
Yes.
Because I'm getting both of these books, by the way. I'm going to get them both.
Every devotion is based on a quote from a specific episode. So at the top, it'll say season 5, episode 4, and then whatever that episode is. And then there's a quote from the show. And then the devotion is basically based on that quote. There might be a story of me on the set, or a story from, you know, me as a mom, if it's a mom quote, or, you know, whatever. And then there's like a Bible verse and some little questions. It's just, you know, like a typical devotion, but it's definitely for the Little House fan, because if you haven't watched the show, you're not going to get it.
Yeah. You going to watch the show, Lynn?
I am going to watch the show. Are this like piqued my curiosity.
I'll suggest some starting episodes.
I can't do that, Joey. You know, I always have to start things.
You're
going to
start
at the beginning? You can't just like pick things.
I can't wait to hear how you respond. Wendy, I was thinking of some of my favorite episodes. There's no way to reduce it down. I mean, there's so many, but some of the low-hanging fruit was the He Was Only 12 two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, one of their adopted sons runs into a bank while it was being robbed. The guy turns around, shoots him. And so, and real bad guys. And so Charles goes after the bad guys with his friend, which was a very dangerous thing because they were so dangerous. And but then after that, here goes the Christian theme of everybody is telling Charles, you need to give up. James is not going to come out of this coma. It's done. And your optimism is hurting the rest of the family because they're trying to have closure. And so he leaves the house, goes out into the wilderness, builds an altar, an angel comes out there, and man, when James, like, so Charles' wife, Carolyn, actually goes out there in the wilderness, and everything had already transpired, and James steps away from the altar, and it's just like, oh my gosh, just brings me to tears. I really like the Carrie fell in a hole episode. It's just, as a kid, I was just mesmerized. I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. And one of them that I think a lot of people wouldn't mention, but I just love the racial reconciliation of the episode where they were hauling the explosive liquids and you had that super racist guy who did not want to work with the black guy. And over the episode, his heart started changing, and it was really because of how the black guy was responding to him. And then at the end of the episode, it's very believable. It's not like this all of a sudden he's just completely freed from all of his racism, but it was so subtly done to where it's just like, oh, he actually got to know a black person, and now that's what you need. You need to get to know people, and his heart was being changed. But I love that episode.
Yeah, there's another one that's almost kind of like that one called Blind Journey, and it's when they're transporting the blind kids.
That's right.
And Mrs. Olsen is the prejudiced one. And so that one is super powerful too.
That's right.
But I will say, like, you can't get any better than the very first episode, Harvest of Friends, like absolutely tearjerker.
You're right.
That one is amazing. The Christmas episodes, everyone loves the Christmas episodes. There's two different Christmas episodes.
Now, so Wendy, I'm going to push back a little bit. I consider, even though it's like more intense and not as lighthearted, I consider the Christmas Eve where Miss Beadle sends the kids out into the blizzard, that's the third Christmas episode, because it's around the Christmas holidays. But that one is not as lighthearted and fun because she sends them out into a blizzard.
My kids were growing up, we always watched the Christmas episodes, but we never watched Blizzard, because that one is like, Miss Beadle kills the children again, you know? Poor Miss Beadle. She talks about that every time we're together, you know? Don't watch Blizzard. It's pretty sad. But Christmas on Plum Creek and The Christmas They Never Forgot, Season 1, Season 8, those are amazing. Super good.
Yeah. I've got to know if there is this, maybe it's unsaid or maybe you guys actually talk about it, but why in the world did Michael Landon put Mary through so many bad things? I mean, oh my gosh, she loses a kid in a fire. She goes blind. I mean, she gets in that carriage accident. I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, as a fan of the show and someone who gets the seriousness of it, my brother and I will sometimes laugh like, oh my gosh, can anything else bad happen to one character? Is that something that you guys kind of acknowledge, just all the stuff that happened to Mary?
Well, Mary had to go blind because she is a historical character who did go blind. So she had to go blind. But the fire and the carriage thing, those were created by Michael Landon. So, he's just got to spice it up every once in a while.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, even we laugh, even her first teaching job where that religious lady called her a Jezebel and the whole town turns against her. And then compare that to Laura's first teaching job where Monzo falls in love with her. It's like there can't be a bigger contrast.
Yes.
Hopefully. Wendy, thank you so much. Is the best place, I think you have your stuff on Etsy, right?
I do, yes. I have a shop on Etsy with like all my prairie things that I take to events, yes.
Yep.
That's where you can find my book and everything. But you can find my book anywhere, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, you know, wherever. Yeah, it's great. My website, come see me on my website.
Yep, we'll have it all in the show notes.
Ministry to Little House Fans, so yeah.
Well, I think you know that it has been an honor to meet you. I really appreciate this time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's been so fun.
You've been listening to the Things You Won't Hear on Sunday Seacoast Podcast. In the show notes, you'll see a link to our Facebook group page. Also, we'd love for you to consider subscribing so you get these episodes downloaded right when they come out. If you enjoy the podcast, we'd love for you to give us some love by rating us on iTunes or Spotify. We now have video versions of these episodes on our Seacoast YouTube channel for those who enjoy listening and watching. Thanks so much for listening.